Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Maxwell, and this is my show, Proud to be Different, at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the Essence of Success Network. The call-in number today is area code 646-727-2914. We will take calls after the halftime moment. First off, I want to start out with a story that has been floating around the internet for the past week or so. It's something that's kind of close to my heart. For all of you who know me, my past included a couple times of being homeless. So when the story came out in Fort Lauderdale of a 90-year-old man who had been arrested for feeding the homeless, I was kind of intrigued and annoyed. When you have a city that is most well known for beer bongs and girls gone wild, for them to pass an amendment that says you are not allowed to feed the needy and the homeless, that just kind of sounds messed up. So I looked into it, and the actions that Arnold Abbott, the 90-year-old, had violated, passed the law that, like I said, had happened, came through on the 22nd of October. And he had been arrested twice this week alone, this past week, most recently Wednesday, when he was in the midst of handing out food to the homeless on this beach in Fort Lauderdale. The police officers came with citations, and one of them actually said, quote, "Drop the plate immediately." And Mr. Abbott said that it was sounding like he meant it as a weapon that he had. Abbott and two others had been arrested on Sunday, last Sunday, right before they were ready to hand out meals to about 300 folk that were there. Everything was very well taken care of. There wasn't any fights. There wasn't mass hysteria. It was just folks that were there that were needing food. We all know we've seen Florida. It's gotten kind of strange over the past, what, 4 or 5 years now? And this is just sort of icing on the cake, in my opinion. His organization, Arnold Abbott's organization, we at Love Thy Neighbor stated that they would like you to urge all to please contact the mayor of Fort Lauderdale, Mr. Jack Sealer, S as in Sam, E as in everyone, I as in India, L as in Larry, E as in everyone, R as in Richard, at his office, area code 954-828-5003, or via email at jack.sealer@fortlauderdale.gov, and basically pass on the information. So that's kind of the idea, trying to get the information out there, pass it on, say, hey, Fort Lauderdale's got this weird law happening right now, and we need to urge the city government to overturn it, to close it out, or to start programs to help out the folks that are there that are needy, because it just doesn't make any sense. It's against humanity, in my opinion. So that is it for pop culture social stuff this week, because I want to spend as much time as humanly possible speaking with our guest. Our guest today is Stephen Saunders, who's a very good friend of mine, who is also a father of a couple of young, brilliant kids. His oldest kid is I believe him to be the future overlord of our planet, so I revere him greatly. And he is also a young kid who deals with being autistic. And because of this, I have looked into autism, and I've become a great admirer of those who work with autistic folk, as well as have a respect for folks that deal with autism. So I have my guest on now. Steve, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me okay?
Okay. Just to let people know in the recording, Steve is calling on Skype from Canada. So as we talked earlier, it sounds like he's on a really good car phone. So if you can't hear him, blast up the stereo so you can hear. But I just want to start out and sort of go into the history of working with his son. Now, Steve, when you and your ex-wife had your son, what were the early stages that you saw any sort of stuff come up for you that made you question whether or not he had autism, or was it something that you just didn't even think of?
Well, it's really interesting. And by the way, thanks for having me on the show, Mac. Drake never exhibited any signs of anything out of the ordinary until probably about 3. And when he did, and this is before he moved to Canada, this was back in Seattle, his pediatrician said he wasn't autistic and that he didn't exhibit signs. And it was actually his speech therapist. He started getting a speech therapist because he didn't talk. His speech therapist suggested, and she's a really good friend of mine too, and she suggested that he's perhaps has or is on the autistic spectrum. And it wasn't until we moved to here to Victoria, BC, where they have a huge network through Queen Alexandra, which is it's a center for learning disabilities and autism and things of that nature. And they assessed him, and they are a team of 8 people, all of them autistic. They said he's autistic. And so, and it made sense because he had all the signs, he's lining everything up, he didn't speak, he was speech delayed, he had odd emotional reactions to things, and so we were really concerned. And so that's how we came to figure out that our little boy was autistic.
Now, I had, for the folks at home, I had passed on an article to Steve earlier this week, in kind of promo of the show, that I thought was interesting is that some research had come up this week talking about that they believed or their finding in their study that the early patterns of autism can be seen in the sense that when we're born, our brain has overstimuli that's going on, and so it automatically pushes back certain stuff so it doesn't basically just overload with all the stimuli that happens. Whereas with a child that's born autistic, they don't have that same sort of pushback, and so their brain automatically is just overloaded with different stimuli, and the synapses nerves get as we see, like in cartoons and stuff like that, of pictures of brains scientifically, it'll show the little lightning storms that happens with all the little nerve endings in the brain and the whole pattern and whatnot. So, if you got a chance to read that, Steve, what is your opinion as a parent in the sense of scientifically, we have these little investigations that happen, and did you think much of it?
Well, I mean, it was an interesting article. I have it open right now.
Okay.
You know, short, covers it very, very quickly. And so you're asking what I think about how, like, when we can discover what's the neurological mechanism that causes autism?
Yeah.
Is what you're asking? Yeah. And first of all, it's necessary for us to understand what autism is, and it's become a very broad definition. You have a lot of people that are Asperger's, people like my son Drake, he's what you call higher functioning autistic, and he's also hyperactive, and which is something that I have as well as ADHD. And I don't mean like I can't pay attention kind of thing. I mean like full on need to be medicated ADHD, which studies are showing more and more that these are all related to the same parts of the brain. And so my son has to actually learn to cope with this. When I was younger, I noticed he has a lot of the same behaviors I did, as my mother likes to tell me. And I had to, unfortunately for me as a child, you had to, back in the 70s and early 80s, you had to conform or you're treated like a freak. Nowadays, like my son can get the treatment and care that's compassionate, as opposed to just being essentially being forced to comply.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if there's of course your brain is a machine, right? So, of course, a biological machine. So, if if there's markers and neurological mechanisms that we can see, we can cut it off at the pass, or perhaps learn to adjust to it. Because I don't really think autism is necessarily a disorder or disability like missing a leg or missing a part of the brain. It's just the brain functions differently for that person. That's a hype,
and I think that's something that has been really well spoken about over the past, as early as the past maybe 2 or 3 years, maybe 4 years, whereas folks, spokespeople from the autism community have stood up and said, I am no different than anybody else. I have something that I deal with, and I'm able to get through the day, and I'm okay, and I don't need to be changed. I'm not stupid. I'm not lower class. I am just like you. And when we have kind of a hysteria effect of folks like Jenny McCarthy and Celine Moon Frye, or no, not Celine Moon Frye, the Chick Fan Big Bang Theory, who comes out and says, well, it's because of shots when they're children and medications and all that kind of stuff. And that drives me crazy because I'm just like, this is stupid. Mm-hmm. There is no scientific evidence that shows whatsoever that these things cause any harm in anybody, especially something like autism, because we don't really know about it. We're still learning. And
well,
so,
Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to ask was, when you guys started finding out about the details of Drake's situation, what sort of reaction did you have as parents to this?
Well, it was right around the time that Wakefield's like a fallacious study came out. Like, His study is what triggered this whole autism is caused by vaccines craze. It's been debunked thoroughly since. And it's essentially based on the shaky theory that it's autoimmune related, which it could be, but it's not caused by vaccines. I have a ton of autoimmune issues myself, and so do my sons. Everything from diabetes to lupus and stuff like that. So it's when we were, of course, my wife at the time and I, she especially started getting really like, we can't give him, we have to feed him nothing but organic foods. We can't give him any shots. We can't, cause she naturally freaked out. That's why I actually view, Jenny McCarthy, as well-meaning as she is, as a bit of a social terrorist, because I mean, to use hyperbolic words to that effect, she does more harm than good, and you can't listen to her. Cause she doesn't even know how to explain how immunization works. So, you could actually say this actually caused a rift in my marriage and was one of the first steps towards our divorce, is because we would react to how our son, because it's stressful, right? You're reacting to this whole thing and everyone's saying, well, you can't give your kid vegetables that come from like a regular farm because that's going to give him mental retardation or something. And it was an incredibly difficult time to go through. And also the fact that autism was like, people say, oh, he's autistic. Can I catch that? And like, it was bizarre how people view autism, like it's some kind of disease they can catch. So yeah, we learned a lot. We went through a lot during that time. It was, wow, 8 years ago, 7 years ago, something like that.
Yeah. Well, how old is Drake now?
He is 10.
He's 10. Now. Wow. Good on him.
Yeah.
And something that, because I follow your, as you know, I follow your stories and whatnot on Facebook all the time. And one of the things that I personally, I've repeated to a lot of people when I talk to folks about my friendship with you and watching you grow as a father and as a parent, one of the things that you had pointed out to me, which I thought was, one, freaking adorable, two, freaking awesome, was his brother, your youngest son, had noticed his learning curve was at a higher level than Drake's, than his older brother. And he became protective of anybody who would, or of his brother, if anybody tried to mess with Drake. And when I had heard that, I was just, oh my God, I love him. He's such an awesome kid.
he is an adorable little boy.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, because a lot of cases it would have been the other direction, where he would just act out because his brother was getting too much attention, whatever, and so he just would have automatically said, well, I'm just going to do whatever I want. And instead, he turned around, and it shows what great parenting that the both of you have on him in the fact that he says, this is my brother, and I'm going to take care of him. And I think that's freaking awesome. What kind of stuff have you seen between the interaction of them? Because they're only, like, what, a year or two apart in age, right?
They're 2 years apart. Yeah. Two years, two months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how much do they act together and different?
Well, they're because of the, I would say, social delays that Drake has, he and Vance are on about the same level emotionally. Vance is rather advanced for his, ironically, but considering his name, or coincidentally enough, he's rather advanced emotionally for his age. And his older brother is a little bit behind because he's what we would call immature. And we tell Drake to emulate his younger brother and the people around him. It's like actually one of his social therapies that his interventionist has brought in. And an interventionist is sort of like they're an emotional counselor that hangs out with your autistic child at a young age and helps them associate socially with people.
Okay.
It really helps to have an outside person. So that's what an interventionist is, if people are curious what that is. And so he was told to act like his, to follow his younger brother's lead, but it wasn't perfect. And Vance had to be taught a little bit about, so the kids in school would make fun of Drake a bit. And Drake, like kids do horrible things sometimes. And Drake wouldn't really notice too much because he doesn't pick up on social cues very well. And we had to sit Vance down and say, okay, buddy, you need to protect your older brother, and he'll protect you one day, and it's what family does. And I gave him the talk, and then Vance understands that they're a team. And I mean, they're over here right now, and they're hanging out. I think they're watching some Clone Wars or Futurama or something, and hanging out because they know they're doing this. And so they're like an inseparable team, almost like twins. It took some time because the younger brother had to kind of catch up and understand why people will pick on Drake sometimes, like why they feel, and usually it's adults who react in a negative manner towards Drake because they think he's just an unruly child. Like you have to understand that if we're walking down the street and there's an old fellow walking by, Drake automatically says, "How old are you?" He doesn't say hi. He doesn't say, hello, how are you? And he'll back up and go, oh, hello, how are you? How old are you? And he has to know their age. He wants to know.
Yeah.
I remember being like that as a kid. And when I was a kid and you did that to people slapped you, right? So, or told you to mind your manners or whatever. So nowadays, people just kind of act weird around him. They go, oh, well, that's an odd kid. Luckily, most older people are very cool and understanding. And Drake won't stop asking questions until I try to teach him how to break off from conversation. It's difficult because he overfocuses. But it's between the brothers, their dynamic is very strong bond between them, and it's been really interesting to see as they've grown older. You know, they have the same interests, they speak the same. Drake is still more speech delayed, but he's getting better, and his younger brother has a more his reading capabilities are much higher. The younger brother inherited my reading capabilities. He could read a super advanced level already, whereas Drake is more behind on reading, and he's getting better though. We've had to put him in special classes, but his reading has seriously improved. And they help each other out. It's really cool to see.
Yeah, because as knowing you and your background of being geeky and into role playing games and video games and all things chaos, watching you sort of pass that on to another generation, one, I think is hysterically fabulous. The second of all, the fact that they've grasped it and just the stories that you tell. I mean, as I've often asked you for permission, I'm always like, can I tell people this? Is it okay if I pass this on? Because, I mean, you literally have, if I was a father, I'd want to have the kind of same sort of experiences that you're having, because they're just so darn cool. Not that they're sappy and Hallmarky in any way. They're just cool. So when dealing with situations where say Drake is having an issue or Drake is having a problem in public, how's the outside world treated the situation? Because I only ask because there was a special on 2020 or something like that where they had actors playing out a situation where a kid was having problematic issues in a restaurant, and people were supposed to freak out over it, and then they showed how everybody was reacting to it. And I was wondering, has that ever happened to you? Is there something where you had to take him outside or hold him for a moment and just say everything's going to be okay?
When Drake was younger, you would have incredibly explosive, very sudden tantrums. It would be like if I just start shrieking as loud as I can right now for no reason.
Yeah.
At least from our perception. I remember one time we were at, when he was about 3 and a half, this is when it started, we were at, we were at the Gap or something like that in a Seattle suburb, and he started freaking out, and these two young guys that were in the elevator with us said, looked at me, and I swear to God, they said this, they go, "Bet you wish you wore a condom, huh?" So I might have hit the closed door button, stood in front of the door, and let Drake shriek while they were in there the whole time. Because I have a bit of a temper, and I took it out on these guys, and then I told them basically what I thought of them, which may have included a few vulgar words and a bit of intimidation. I used to work as a doorman at nightclubs. So,
yeah.
And this is because you don't react like that. People, Jesus Christ, people have decorum. Kids freak out.
Yeah.
Everyone pooped themselves at some time or another. And, hey, we're all heading that direction as old people, too. And so it's the circle of life. If a kid freaks out, I believe a parent should take him out of the situation. That's you should get him away. But I'm also the kind of person that I volunteer on flights to sit next to the screaming baby because they don't bother me.
Yeah.
They never have. I come from a home that has raised kids and stuff, so whatever. But other people are irritated by it, and that's okay. But I always ask them, if you don't like it and the parent doesn't remove the kid, then you need to remove yourself as well. And you need to keep your temper in check. And you need to understand that it takes a society built by everybody. And that some kids have freakouts and stuff like that. And 3-year-olds will be 3-year-olds. So, but yeah, we had other issues too. We just discovered we couldn't go out to eat with the kid. So you just adjust to it, right? You got to adjust to it. And some parents out there, they think they can take their kid everywhere. And those parents, I hate to say that you guys are kind of jerks because you're ruining other people's fun, but also sometimes kids act up. So it's kind of it's like a balancing act, right? It's society. So we just learned how to essentially work around Drake's issues. But once we found out he was autistic, when he was about, 4, we were then able to know what to do. Hold him, take him out of the situation, redirect him, that kind of stuff. We had to learn the techniques. Before that, we had no idea. We would just basically take him out to the car and let him scream until, you know, like until my wife cried or something. So it was just, what else can you do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
wow. Well, if it makes you feel any better, and folks out there, I do apologize. I didn't mention this at the beginning like I should have. I'm still learning. It's been a few months. I'm getting used to it. Dearest Nina is in charge of the chat room, and she said, little 5'2 me would have something, a strip off of them, which I have a feeling that would be she would have taken them out, and it wouldn't have been pretty. Yeah, I just would have said, you guys are actually the ones who should be wearing condoms. I've seen cases where, only because of the fact that I've taught myself to understand autism now, and I can see parents with their kids and how their kids react to things, and I see the signs, and I'm like, oh, there's a kid who's got autism or Asperger's or whichever.
Yeah.
So it's if he or she, well, because generally it's affected by males than it is females, but females are in that spectrum. I see the kid and I know how to react. And if anybody starts reacting badly over that situation, I sort of put myself between them and the family.
Mm-hmm.
Not having anything to do with the family, not caring about the family, making sure they're gone and doing their own thing. And I sort of cut myself in as a wall because of it.
Well, it's good. Yeah,
and
it's just
me, like, doing your old job of being a bouncer and just saying, look, you don't know what's going on, so you can just sit there and shut up.
You gotta understand that actually intervening, even in a peaceful manner, it redirects the situation. One of the things people have to understand is one of the reasons why people are, I don't know if I can say, we'll say a-hole. The reason why people are a-holes to each other is because they see kids screaming and they get an opportunity to lay judgment on someone else. It's better if they don't know them because they don't have to deal with repercussions, like that person disliking them or whatever. That's how we're biologically wired, right? So I'll actually, nowadays, I just explain to people why they're acting that way. And I'll just say, the reason why you're upset with my son is because you want to lay judgment on someone to feel better about yourself because you've had a bad day, your boss yelled at you, your husband isn't talking to you, whatever. And they just kind of always get that kind of, you know, like, whatever, man. But it's diffused. Before, 10 years ago, I would have thrown him through a wall. Like, I was a lot more angry about things. And I'd rather be the more benign, like you were saying, like, put yourself in this. If I see this kind of stuff, I put myself in a situation and try to stay as nice and polite, just like a bouncer should, as nice and polite as possible, and try to diffuse the situation. So,
that's what I learned from being a bill collector.
Yeah, exactly.
So in a way that you can actually say that your son has given you lessons on how to better handle your anger management situation then.
Oh yeah. I've learned to keep my, because autistic children can be very frustrating, and I'm not gonna lie here and say, oh, my son's a perfect little angel. Sometimes they get angry, and I might have said God damn it a couple times, and you know, and I'm a lot like my father. My father's a great man, but he can have a short fuse sometimes, at least verbally. And so I've never like yelled and screamed at my sons, but I certainly got me angry. And I just learned to just walk away and redirect myself, just like we've taught, like everything we've taught Drake, I have to apply to myself as well, because who knows, maybe I'm on the autistic spectrum too. So and it works for me. I just redirect myself and I separate myself and I maybe play a video game or something to chill out or watch some TV or whatever. And it works. I suggest that's good for everybody, actually. So.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you to hang out here for a second. I'm going to play some music. We're going to do our halftime, folks. And I'm going to play a little song, a little ditty that is by an artist that Steve and I both really appreciate, the late, great Mr. Falco with Vienna Calling, which is one of his big songs from the 80s. So If you can hang out for a second, folks, when we get back and the song is over with, I'll bring Steve back onto the line, and we'll take any calls that are out there. The phone number is area code 646-727-2914. So give us a moment, and we'll be right back. Thank you. Okay, we are back with Proud to Be Different. I am the host, Maxwell. I've got my great friend, Steve, online that I've been interviewing about being the father of an autistic son. And the phone lines are open, which is area code 646-727-2914. And this is all brought to you by the Essence of Success Network. So, Steve, real quick, with your experience of raising Drake as well as your second kid, how often do you get to see other children with the same sort of situation that Drake is going through and see how family dynamics are? Do you get to compare your experience with other families of the same sort of ilk at all?
Yes, and actually, before I go into that really quick, I just want to say thank you for playing Falco. When I was young, when I was Drake's age, I was still trying to figure out how to be a person because I was very weird and detached. I was like one of those weird, detached, smart kids. And Falco, I lived in Germany, and Falco was huge there. And I used to listen to Falco constantly, and I'm a huge – I actually wept when he died. Like, I'm tearing up right now thinking about it. So anyway, thank you for playing that. We have good friends that live nearby. They live here in Victoria that have a son who is on the autistic spectrum, and they're wonderful parents. And their son is way less interactive with society. He just goes and does his own thing. So they have to completely. Whereas we can tell Drake like to behave or ask him to be, you know, to calm down or remove him very quickly. Drake doesn't freak out as much, right? He doesn't like get overwhelmed. And this other child, who's a wonderful kid, doesn't make eye contact. He'll shake his hands. That's like what I call the autistic handshake, which is where they kind of it's pretty common actually. You'll see like kids kind of start waving their hands almost limply in front of them and shaking them. And that's a way of reacting to overstimulation. And this kid does that, and I do spend some time occasionally with that family, but my ex-wife and I, we do disagree a little bit. She thinks that Drake should be around more socially quote-unquote normal children, and I think that Drake can be good around other autistic children because he can show them that you can be yourself without having to compromise too much. But, I mean, it's always different for everybody because this kid basically lives online because online he's what you would call normal and very interactive with the world. But in person, that kid is really it's almost like a wall. And then also the other kids that are autistic, I wouldn't even know they're autistic. They're absolutely like they just seem very, very quiet or shy. And a lot of people don't think Drake's autistic. They just think he's hyperactive. You know, he's just real big, smiley, running around kid. So it's realize that on the autistic spectrum is like a rainbow. There's so much of it that I refuse to believe that it's a disorder because literally half the population has it. So what point is it a disorder if everyone has it, right? So it's sort of like a. Which is why I think there's a lot of people self-diagnosing themselves with autism in some way. I just think it's where brain works and trying to conform to our current societal standards. This is a hunter-gatherer society, et cetera. So, I don't know. I can go on and on, but there's only so much time.
No, I agree because I look at folks that are out there anywhere from somebody that you run across, say, that works at a coffee shop or a politician on TV, or when you see an actor being interviewed, you can see little hints of that social reaction that they have that we can label as being autism or Asperger's or somewhere in the spectrum. Because I think that we all have forms of it, but it's been, you either have to be extreme or not at all. And I don't think that that is something that we can actually live with anymore. I think that we have to look at the whole thing.
Well, I think we're, as a society, we're discovering the ramifications of having a very advanced social, like, for instance, society has advanced more in the last 400 years than it has in the last 4,000. Part of it has to do with stimulants being introduced to our society, like caffeine, on a regular basis. And drinking the consumption of less alcohol, because alcohol used to be part of society every day. People used to start their day with, like, beer oatmeal. So, and now we don't. And not only that, but we're also more accepting of people who have differences, in at least in what we would call first world nations. It's a misnomer that I don't get into that. But the thing is, because in the old days, like when my dad was a child, he said, like, that was, he goes, and it sucked, it was beaten out of you. You had to be, you had to suffer being a mildly autistic person in society, or else you got the living crap knocked out of you. And that was very normal. And I'm really happy, and my father and I are both very happy to see society is way more understanding. And I think in a way we can learn from this as a society, learn like other people. Just because someone's having a bad day doesn't mean you have to treat them like crap. You can simply try to understand and be more compassionate. Our society is becoming way more humanist, is what I'm saying. But when your autism affects your life in such a way that you can't, like that kid I was talking about, it is unlikely our friend's child will actually have a normal life. He will always be a quote-unquote weird and difficult to understand person, and he'll always be in this sort of isolation, and he has to learn to deal with that. I know some adult autistic people who are like that too, and it's hard. And luckily, people now can simply, like you and I, talk about this and go, oh, well, they must have some kind of issue. It doesn't matter. It's not my business. I'll simply just be compassionate and friendly and understanding to this person. And maybe, you know, we can all learn from it. We'd have less conflict in society. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too much of a dreamer.
Yeah, when I was working at a clothing manufacturer company, a few years back, there was a young guy that I met up with who everybody thought he was kind of the weird guy in the office, and he had kind of snarly teeth and bad breath, and there were times he came in and he hadn't, like, taken a shower or anything like that, and we were just all like, oh, that's just him, and blah, blah, blah. And then in retrospect, when I look at his actions and everything, and he had an ex-wife, and he had like a few kids by her, and all this kind of stuff, and we were all like, wow, really, he like got to have an ex-wife and all that. We were like, oh, wait a minute, no, he has Asperger's, because he falls into the pattern of how he interacted with us as well as the people on the phone that he did customer service with. And he did his job really well. He was good at it. But his interaction with people was completely different. And now, in retrospect, I realize, and I kind of wish that I had acted differently because I didn't know any different at the time, that I had respected what he was going through. I just didn't know what to deal with. And so it's one of those things of, if only I knew then what I know now, I'd be smarter.
People, there's a reason for everything.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's people always have a reason. It's not like people are gonna wake up in the day and go, wow, I think I'm just not gonna take a shower again, so people can think I'm some piece of human still. It's gonna be awesome. I can't wait. No one's like, I mean, there's always a reason for it, right? So it's like when I talk to I have a teenage stepson who's absolutely wonderful, great kid, but you gotta tell him to shower occasionally, right? Because he's a teenager, he doesn't really care. Because he's used to, he's got to remind him sometimes. And there's some of the adults I've known, you got to politely and privately remind them, like, hey, buddy, you need a shower. But that's because they don't really notice anything about that. And it's not like, it's not some evil, they're not Hitler, right? So just there's a reason why that is. So that guy probably had his reasons, or didn't think about it, or it wasn't concerning him, or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting from the way that I look at people and the way that I sort of examine them. I don't know if it's because of the writer in me, but I just have this tendency to just sort of stand back and just watch people and see how they interact with people and themselves. And when I see certain habits, I sort of classify it in my little brain, in my little mind file cabinet like Sherlock has, where I can say, okay, here's an action, this is the reaction, this is how it plays out. And when I've learned stuff around autism and Asperger's and that sort of thing, I say, okay, I can see this person is doing this is how the reaction is, let's see if it plays out, yes or no. Mm-hmm. So when you, as somebody who has dealt so intimately with it, When you see folks that you think may or may not have it, do you watch them to see if, in fact, they do have it? Say, okay, I'm standing here in the grocery store. I can see somebody reacting to somebody else, good or bad. I wonder if they have what I've seen personally. Do you get that chance at all?
Oh, of course. The interesting thing, though, you mentioned about being a writer, and I think I am a writer because of that. But you also need to take into account that when you have a hammer, every problem is a nail, right? So
yeah.
it's more like, so you have an autistic kid, or if you're autistic yourself, you start to look at everything like, maybe they have autism. I realize how many people I diagnose, like Dr. Saunders thinks you have ADHD, because I start seeing it in everybody around me, and or like, oh, you have a cough, you have lupus. So so I have to try to step back and try to look at it objectively, and I realize that autism is more of an exaggeration of certain traits that all humans have, and human beings running through their biological meat carriage, you know, and everything's a biochemical reaction in your brain, and you know, whether you want to attach spiritualism to that or not, that's your business. But ultimately, we're these complex animals, and everyone has like either an ulterior motive or not, or how they're interacting. And I like studying it because it's fascinating. But yeah, on the average day, I can go through and be like, see three people who have like odd tics or weird quirks that sort of fall in the spectrum, and then everything becomes a nail. So,
yeah. Well, because I know from my own experience of being in recovery. For so long, I've been able to turn around and I can see people's actions of that of somebody who has an addictive personality. And it's my own armchair reaction to, okay, this is how they're reacting. They have that look in their eye because I used to have that look in my eye and I know how that brain works. So I see that in other people and I go, aha, there's somebody who's got a little bit of an issue.
Right.
So yeah. So that's kind of where I was coming from with that concept.
Right, right. I would say like in a similar situation, I may observe them and go, aha, they're an ADHD person self-medicating. So because that's a lot of the hyperactives do that because your brain is like my brain is at 1,000% every day, every waking hour. So I used to drink heavily because of that, right? And smoke cigarettes and stuff. And when I stopped doing all that, holy crap, did it, like my brain go absolutely berserk. So being a recovering addict, you can see that. Me being a person who deals with ADHD daily, I have to see that. And then, or even the night before in diabetes, which I also have, and I believe you've dealt with that. Like you start seeing that, like, oh, that person, they're sweating. Maybe they have low blood sugar. So you start applying all those kinds of things. That's a good thing out there. So it's just that when you intervene with them and they don't know you, then that starts becoming kind of odd. But
I start seeing somebody sweating and I automatically think they're Whitney Houston on Smack.
But they can have low blood sugar. Like I remember somebody wondering. I've collapsed before. It was a long, like 14 years ago in IHOP in Seattle. I collapsed, and people thought I was a heroin addict. And it took one gangbanger guy, because he was the first person I saw when I came to say, this man's a diabetic, and he's going through insulin shock. And he was totally right. That's exactly what happened. And so I just hadn't noticed. And everyone else is going to write me off as an addict, right? So it's just, everyone sees the world through their own worldview. So, yeah.
Now, with Drake, from what you've seen from him so far, because a lot of people say, oh, well, folks that are autistic, kids that are autistic or Asperger's or whatever, they're such pro-life. They love people and all this kind of stuff. Do you see him having the personality that most folks have, which is they're happy-go-lucky, but at the same time, if you make them mad, then they're just going to be cruddy for the rest of the day? Or is he just nonchalant happy?
I would say Drake is currently, because he's getting older. We worry about what he's going to be like when he goes through puberty, but it's a worry that anyone has for the children. But right now, I would say that he has his attitude's pretty detached. Like, he can be very, like, he doesn't say, "Dad, can I get some juice, please?" He says, "I'm thirsty." Right? That's like the train. Like, Drake, what do we say? And he goes, "May I please have some juice?" Can you say it nicer? "Dad, can I please have some juice, please?" And I'm like, okay, that's good enough. But whereas his younger brother will totally lays the charm on, because that's what he does. He's a very charismatic little kid. Whereas Drake is way more direct. Like, because why would, think about it. Why in the world would you beat around the bush? If you're thirsty and your dad controls, like, the juice cabinet, if you will, wouldn't you go to him and say, "I am thirsty," right? And then he'll dole out the juice to you. That's where he's coming from. But also, he can have rages. For give you an example, Drake does running, right? He's a cross country runner, and he's one of the best in the
yeah.
city. And he recently there was a lot of hills in the last cross country city race. It was the finals, and he didn't do as well, and he didn't place in the top 10. Right?
Okay.
He had a breakdown. Like, he started crying, was upset. And, you know, his mom and I had to hug him and tell him it was going to be okay. But he was so upset with himself that he had, like, essentially a meltdown. And that's just something you have to deal with. Like, the other kids, they didn't give a crap. They're like, whatever. But as soon as people saw that look on his face, people started, like, you know, distancing themselves because they knew Drake was going to have a meltdown. And it's because he's very upset that he didn't do that. He can be like that about, in Dungeons & Dragons. If his character doesn't, if something happens that's out of his control, he gets angry. And I've used role-playing games to help go, like, you know, deal with this better. It's better to deal with, like, an imaginary interaction than a real one. So we practice. And our D&D sessions are actually quite mundane and tame. But, yeah, so we practice this kind of stuff. But, yeah, so... And normally he's pretty friendly. He likes to know. He likes to talk to people and find out all about them. And he's sincere. He's a very sincere kid. Everything he says is the truth. You know, like, it's very, very direct and literal. So, interesting to deal with.
Yeah. Really quick before I forget, I wanted to give a shout out to somebody who I think is really special in your life, Nicole. And one of the things that I wanted to ask was, when you met Nicole, did you have any sort of concern or interpretation meeting someone and saying, "Hey, here I am.
Yes.
Here are my kids. This is my life."
Okay, so I'm going to tell this story really quick. It's actually in a book I have coming out, but I'll tell it right now, and it's going to make people listening angry. I guarantee you. So before Nicole, there was somebody else. I won't name her. She's an ex-girlfriend, and we were at her parents' house for Christmas with my parents, and it was a nice Christmas get together. And we come back into the room, and this is only like Drake is like at that point like 8 years old. We come back into the room, like, and we gotta understand that it's like one of those dining areas right off the living room, so it's not like the kids were unsupervised. But we're all talking at the table, having a good time, doing our adult Christmas dinner stuff while the kids are playing in the living room. We come out, and Drake has drawn in black marker, the markers that the girlfriend's parents gave him, a giant racetrack, right, on the carpet, like a $6,000 rug. And naturally, people get pissed because, well, it is an upsetting thing to see your awesome carpet destroyed. But you got to understand, this is also a rich family, like $600 carpet cleaning is nothing to them. They own like 3 condos in Bermuda kind of stuff. But still, you know, so I, you know, I'm like, "Oh God, Drake, we got it." So I go and I tell the parents, and the dad is upset, you know, but my parents kind of laugh, and the mom laughs, she laughs too, and the girlfriend has a meltdown, like a complete meltdown, like, "Oh my God, this is what I get for dating a guy with an autistic son," kind of stuff. So, it was horrible. And so when I started dating Nicole, I was worried about this, right? I was very worried that she would, like, because Drake would sometimes do stuff that he would consider to be odd. Like, he'll, like, run into a wall. Like, he likes to run back and forth. He's always been hyperactive, right? So, you know, he's always fidgeting. And you know, Nicole isn't perfect. She does find him annoying sometimes, you know. And she's a wonderful person. Don't get me wrong. You know, just... But sometimes she'll be a little bit annoyed, but she's honest about it. She'll tell me, I'm going to go upstairs and just hang out on my iPad. Because she has a demanding job, and she's a very non-social person. You know, like, she likes to have her time. Her job is very demanding socially. And so it's understandable. But so far, she's been wonderful.
Yeah.
And other people have been wonderful. Like, after my wife and I split up, I would say I only really dealt with one person having a serious issue with Drake. Otherwise, not an issue. But, most people realize that even if they have an issue with an autistic kid, they're kind of an asshole. But if you do have an issue, I beg people to be upfront about it as nice as possible. Say, hey, your kid makes me uncomfortable. My wife dated a guy that had the same problem. He tried to be cool with Drake, but he admitted to me that Drake irritated him. I'm like, hey, it's okay, man. That's what's going to happen. Just don't ever yell at my son.
Yeah, in my mind, when I think about your kids, I think in terms I'm a geek, I love cartoons, and I think of Drake as being the kid from The Incredibles. He's the speedster, he's hyperactive, he runs around at top speed, and he's got cool hair just like his dad. And that's kind of that's where I put him at. And I think of Vance as being this kid who's going to be like the world's greatest scientist. Now, I've met Nicole once. I thought she was an amazing person. So I automatically thought, okay, this is somebody that I hope that Steve gets to spend a lot of time with. And it's interesting that because you don't refer to her as your girlfriend whenever I've talked with you. It's always been your partner. And I like the fact that you put her in a level where it's equal sort of thing. I think that is something that is really respectful and that you have that with your kids, that you've got that level of respect and you put them as equals. You don't say, okay, this one's got issues and he's in a special category, or this one is smarter than the other kids, so he's going to be on a special category. It's like they're both your kids. They're both your sons. And I think that's hella cool. So I've always respected that. So,
well, thanks.
We got a couple of minutes. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, I just tend to prefer the term partner because girlfriend or boyfriend sounds, that's someone you're dating and hanging out with or whatever. And then the way I see it, everyone's different. My partner and I, we live together. We share finances. I consider her children like my children. That she's my son's other mom, you know, like we're like one big family. It's actually, I'm happier now with my ex-wife and I are happier with each other now than when we were married. We have like a big family because we're both only children, right? Mm-hmm. So now we have a family, and she really likes the Colts anyway. So yeah. So. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
It's like Brady Bunch on crack. No.
Basically, yes. Yes.
So we got a couple of minutes left before I throw off the last song of the show. Is there anything that you wanted to pass on to folks?
Well, I would tell people, coming from a cynical, moralistic nihilist like myself, that you only got one life to live, so be nice to people. Because you'd want to be nice to you. Be good to each other. And you know what? Bad things happen. But you don't have to make bad things happen to other people. So always remember that everyone is the center of their own universe. And that when you destroy someone, you destroy their universe. And this is what I tell myself every day. And I think it's a good life philosophy. But hey, if you don't, that's okay. You know, like okay. I just really, that's what I would impart on everyone around me. So I know that I have to remember my own advice too sometimes. So that's pretty much what I'd like to say to everybody.
And as I like to say, kumbaya freaking ah. Anyway, I do appreciate you being my guest this weekend. Give my love, of course, to Miss Nicole and the kids. And I'm going to be watching a football game tomorrow because I'm just Butch.
Oh, right. That's awesome. I used to play football.
Not footy ball, actual, like, American football that only Americans care about.
That's right. I was a safety. I was like an athlete in school. Yeah, so, but I also played soccer, too.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, good luck with sports ball. It's,
Thanks, dude. I appreciate it, and I hope you guys have a great weekend.
You too, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah! Okay, so folks that are still out there, I just want to let you know that I've got a couple of things I want to run by you real quick. Next week, starting tomorrow, psychic readings with Lennis on Sundays at 3 p.m. So you can call in and do your readings with her. It's on 6 p.m. on the 10th, which is, I believe, Monday. Blues in the Night, Chicago special, all the great songs from Chicago. On the 12th at 6 p.m. in the studio with Lennis, Hot Topics, talking about all the great stuff that's going on this week. The 14th, Friday, Traffic Jams, her music show. It's going to be themes part two from the 60s, all the wonderful songs from the 60s era. I'm going to be back on next Saturday doing my interview with my friend John Bartholomew. John Bartholomew, who is currently the Associate State Director for Advocacy at the AARP, also used to work for the Oregon chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. So we'll be talking about nonprofits and possibly politics and whatever we can cook up. And then going into that will be... let's see, following on to the 22nd, I'll be doing my show with my friend Mike Young, who is in charge. He is the creator and in charge of founder of Radio Silence Paranormal. Because even though it sounds like a holiday-themed show for Halloween, every day is Halloween, in my opinion. And then at the end of the month, the very last show, on the 29th, is going to be my guest, Matt Mouchot, and we're going to be doing a show talking about his self-connections. He is an intuitive reader, so I'm excited about that. So that's what we're looking at for this month, and again, this has been the Essence of Success Radio Network. My name is Maxwell with Proud to Be Different, and here is the last song of the show for tonight. It is going to be another Falco show, another Falco tune for Steve, and like I said, I myself will be going up to Everett tomorrow, Everett, Washington, to be watching some football, so yay Seahawks. Anyway, hope you guys have a good night, and thank you very much for taking part. Bye. Never gonna stop. Have fun.
Jesus brought her new heart into music.